It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. We're going to talk about what's going on in Dubai with the International Telecommunications Union and their closed-door meeting. What's going on? We're also going to talk about the EU and the U.S. Department of Justice. Will they sue Google for antitrust violations? All that and our tips of the week and the Google changelog all ahead next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 175, recorded December 5th, 2012. Nerd Sitters. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $50 on your first Ting device, visit twig.ting.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click the radio microphone, and enter Twig. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, visit Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG12. And don't forget to try out their new developer platform for complete code control. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about not just Google, but the cloud, the internet, anything really we damn well please. That's because we got the two best hosts anywhere. They know everything, and so we just let them go. And that's, of course, Gina. I almost call her Jeff Trapani. Gina Trapani and Jeff Jarvis. Gina Trapani is the founding editor of Life Hacker. And, of course, ever since I started reading Life Hacker, I've been thinking, how could I get Gina Trapani to do a show with us? But and we're thrilled now. Here we are at episode 174 of Twig. She also writes ThinkUp at thinkup.com and todo.text and just wrote an article, very interesting article, for Marco Arment's The Magazine.
Yeah, iPad mini publishing.
It's kind of a Life Hacker article, how to make a baby.
Yeah, I went straight for the Life Hacker tutorial.
Maker. It's the whole maker thing we've been hearing about. Gina has to be on top of it. It's the ultimate of the maker culture.
Someone said, your title makes it sound as if the regular way to make a baby doesn't count. Let's just say it's the unconventional way to make
Not
a baby.
Not everyone knows how, and this is good. This is good. You're sharing important, vital information. Also, Jeff Jarvis, who shares his public parts with us at all times. That's the name of his book, Public Parts. He's professor of journalism at the City University of New York. And also another guy that I just thought, if there were any way I could do a show with this guy, it would be so good. And boy, to have the two of you on a single show is marvelous. Marvelous, darling. Actually, so an old friend of yours, Gina, is going to be on Triangulation later today. We've got Harper Reed.
Oh, Harper's great. That's going to be a good interview. He's got great hair and glasses and crazy t-shirts.
Both of us have played werewolf with him at food camp. And the reason I wanted to get him on is because he headed the team that did the software for Obama that worked compared to the software for Romney that didn't work. Both the same thing, right?
Yeah, he was a CTO for Obama for America. Yeah. And before that, he was CTO at Threadless.
Yes, t-shirt company.
Yeah, exactly. I was in a werewolf game with him and Ben Hove of Can't Have Cheeseburger. It was like 2 a.m. There was beer. It was.
Was I there? Because I remember
that's
that.
Like being the Algonquin.
I think I was there, Gina.
You may have been there.
I think I was there.
It was a memorable werewolf game. I was like, wow.
That was wow. Is right. The screaming, the yelling.
Yeah, it was a lot of screaming and yelling.
Ben Ha was a little inebriated. It was fabulous. anyway, yeah, he there's a great article about him in The Atlantic. There is Harper. And you know, I can't remember what their program was called. One was called Narwhal, and one, I can't remember, but the Romney program was named something that eats narwhals, I think it was, or something like that. Anyway, we'll get the story. But, and it's interesting, Romney's on election day crashed and didn't work. Yeah, Obama had narwhal, and then Orca was, that's right, the Republicans was called Orca because orcas eat narwhals. In this case, didn't quite work out because I think mostly due to testing. It's a fascinating example of the stuff that we're into, the geekery that we understand. You know, you don't put a website live without testing it under extreme conditions first. And we all know that, but I guess somebody at the Republican National Committee did not.
Early in the campaign, Harper handed me a pin that said "Git branch for Obama," and I thought, "Okay, this is a good sign. The tech at OFA is going to be good."
Git branch for Obama. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He had a really cool team of nerds there. That's going to be a good interview later.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Anyway, I thought I'd mention that because I know you're a fan. At least we like his werewolf skills.
Technique, for sure.
Excellent technique. Google I.O., it's coming, baby.
Make it this time.
As the geek world calls it, Oprah for nerds.
We're back to May this year.
Yeah.
Last year it was June, right?
May 15th through 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll probably have something under your seat, metaphorically. By then, we may have Google Glass.
We might have Google Glass. We might have the touchscreen Chromebook.
Yeah. Would you please explain to me? We talked about this last week and then again on Twit. And I forgot to mention this on Twit, but there's no Chrome OS doesn't have touch, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Maybe this rumor is confusing Chrome OS with Android.
This is going to be name dropping here, but I was in a meeting yesterday with Klaus Schwab, who's the head of the Davos World Economic Forum, and I showed him the Chromebook. That's how obnoxious I am now.
Oh, boy.
This is important. You must see this, right?
He's an evangelist.
What did he do?
What?
The first thing he wants to do is touch the screen.
Touch it. Yeah. I agree.
So I think you just have to now.
I've touched my laptop screen in a moment, not thinking. Have you guys done this?
I do it daily.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing where Microsoft is ahead to have a touchscreen laptop. You know, give them points. Apple should have been touchscreen ages ago.
But one thing we do know for sure is you can't graft touch onto an existing OS. That's what Microsoft did wrong for 10 years.
Right. That's true.
I'm very curious. I mean, now, remember, this is like a DigiTimes rumor. This is like out of China, so that Google's going to do a Chrome.
Maybe wrong. But, you know, we use browsers on our phones and tablets, and we use them touch. So a browser and touch is not incompatible.
So how is, you know, we should explain, and we also mentioned you on Twit this week because you're the only person. Yeah, a little bit. The only person, well, we just said this is a real journalist. The only person we know who would even consider abandoning everything but Google products. You're not using Windows, OS X, you're using a Chromebook, the new Samsung Chromebook, which is nice.
I have to use Skype for you guys. We're going to test Google. I do use the Chrome browser on my office laptop. But I only live in Chrome. I won't do any Microsoft applications or anything else. So I live within Chrome.
And how's that been going for you?
It's been going well. Today was the first time I flew down to Palm Beach, where I am now, see the hotel room. To LexisNexis. That's why I'm in bad hotel lighting, and that's why I'm so pink.
You're at a Four Seasons. Don't complain. I don't want to hear any complaints.
Worse or Ritz. I had the first airplane ride, and it is challenging. You forget that you've got to set up mail and docs for offline use. I planned to be on the plane and use a certain PowerPoint that I was going to present down here. I had it in docs. It didn't show up in the docs. My calendar I couldn't go to. One very irritating thing about the Chromebook, and I don't understand architecturally why this happens, is that it insists on refreshing web pages all the time. So even though
that's
my regular Chrome browser, right, I'll just have the mail. It sits there until I choose to refresh it. I go to the Chromebook, and I got to wait because it's not a very fast thing. It's got to refresh the mail. It's got to refresh this, refresh that. Well, when you're on the plane, it'll immediately say you're offline, you can have this page. And then it'll say you can try if you want to. And you do, and it's in the cache, and it gives you the page. So it's not super smooth. Here's the big lesson thus far. I got to write up this post, but now that I'm – the biggest lesson thus far, I was in my entrepreneurial class. Our students are giving their – dress rehearsals for their final presentations. I'm making my notes, my crit, on Evernote as a Chrome app. Okay? Everything's going fine. We're 4 hours into this. 4 hours. Suddenly, the browser page for Evernote refreshes on its own. And I don't think it's the browser's fault. In this case, I think maybe everything's fault. But I don't know. And all but the first 20 minutes of notes are gone.
Oh.
That's not good.
Not good. And the bottom line here is they don't support Chrome OS, so it does not store locally. So, lesson for living in cloud. Only do things that, number one, store redundantly locally, and number two, that are in a format that you can get to otherwise. So, you know, Google Docs, you can make into a Word document or whatever the heck you want. Evernote, not so much. And Evernote tried, and they were helpful, but there's nothing they could do. It was just gone. Boom. So that
Web491 said in our chat room, basically, you've created a laptop.
Yes. True. But you got to have local storage. You got to have local redundant storage.
Yeah.
You got to have redundant storage, and local is what makes sense. But you're saying that Google hasn't solved this.
The Chromebook has not solved this. You have to do it yourself.
It solves it for its own apps. It's solved beautifully for mail.
Google Docs, yeah, and mail, yeah.
Google Docs and all that, that's fine. And it stores locally, and it keeps going, and that's fine. But Evernote, because it does not have a Chrome OS native app, it's just basically a link. I think that it's an Evernote app. It's not. It's a link to the web app. And if you're on Mac or Windows, you can download the Chrome, Evernote app and then store locally in Evernote format.
It's funny because I'm so dependent on Evernote, too. That would be a deal breaker for me.
It is. The main thing I miss is, I'll make notes in, for as long as this experiment goes on, I'll make them in Google Docs because I have more confidence.
Well, that's what they want, obviously, right?
But it doesn't have neat things like tags.
Right.
That Evernote has.
Right.
So those are the first two real problems I've had. Otherwise, my problem was that I was going to write this big post about what it's like to live in the Google world, and I had nothing to say. No big deal.
It's just like anything else.
Yeah, it was. What's the big?
Gina, is there a mechanism in HTML5 for some sort of local storage?
There is. But Jeff said that Evernote doesn't support.
But they could.
But it could, right? That's how Docs and Gmail works offline.
So that's through. Yeah, that's not as it used to be an add-on, but in fact, it's just pure HTML5.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. You know, but there's something very comforting to me about local storage, traditional local storage, meaning like that, like my file system that I can browse through, like
right.
Evernote and Dropbox. And even, you know, I'm even crazy. Like I work exclusively just in Gmail, you know, in the web browser, but every month I am total nerd. I know, but I have this calendar reminder that's like download your Gmail. You know, I pop and IMAP my Gmail just because I just like the idea that I have a text copy of my email on my hard drive. So if Google went away, if I was disconnected, I could search through my email. There's just something comforting about that. Even though I know that I can lose my laptop or it gets stolen or like the likelihood that my hard drive is going to fry is a lot higher than Google's. HTML5 has local storage, but I'm a nerd, so I like redundancy. I just like the idea that things are sort of propagating across all my devices, you know, kind of in the traditional way. Like that Jeff, I feel your pain losing 3.5 hours of note taking. That just would have slayed me.
And it doesn't help when you're my age and you have a bad memory.
You can't recreate it.
Yeah.
So how did that happen again?
It was weird. The Evernote page just suddenly on its own, not the way. What will happen is some things will refresh. If I go back up here so I get it right. If I'm on a different tab and then I go to my Gmail tab, at that moment, it decides it will refresh the page, even though I know there's no right. new mail since then. I'm just trying to see something. And I have to wait, you know, 10 right. seconds for it to do it, and I curse, and that's that. That's not what happened in this case. I was on the Evernote page. I was taking notes, and suddenly on its own, it just, boom, it decided to refresh and disappear. And when it came back having lost 3 hours. And people said in class, they said, go to the history. And I tried and said, no history, because I didn't have the premium. So I immediately paid the premium, hoping it would be there. But, of course, it wasn't there then.
Oh, do you think if you had a premium account, it wouldn't have happened?
I don't know. The question is, it says that it saves occasionally. You don't know when it's saving.
That's the problem.
That's the problem, too. Whereas Google Docs is telling you, I've just saved it. Right. It's all saved now. Yeah.
It's an implementation issue, but it underscores the hazard.
If you're
going to
live in the cloud, you cannot live fully in the cloud. You still need a foot on the ground.
I mean, I think third-party apps really have to catch up to Google's level. I mean, I would actually feel really comfortable using Google apps in the cloud entirely, right? Drive and Gmail and Calendar, all that stuff I would feel good about. But I think third-party apps just need to play catch-up with that, you know, the same sort of great level of auto-saving and local HTML5 storage and syncing, you know, because that's relatively new.
And I think that you're a little old-fashioned. I think in the long run, if this is implemented properly, you shouldn't ever have to think about a file system or storage or backup.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the point, right?
An automated storage, you know, redundancy.
Because people don't, you know, the part of it is because people don't do the right thing. You know how to do the right thing, but most people do not. It's too much trouble. So the best solution is to do it all kind of automatically, transparently using HTML5 and whatever technologies you need.
I wasn't around Sunday afternoon to watch the show, which I do try to do. So who made fun of me?
Mike Elgin. Huh? Nobody made fun of you. No, we were just amazed. And Mike, you know, is a Google Plus. Mike lives in Google.
He is Google
He's
Plus.
A huge well, Google Plus guy.
Am I out Elgin Delgan?
Pardon me?
You wouldn't. Have I out Mike Delgan? Have I outdone him?
Yeah. I don't think he would use Chromebook only.
He's all about Google Plus, right? But he's not quite.
He's not crazy.
Yeah.
He's in Nairobi, Kenya. Now he is a little crazy. You know what Mike has done, which is I so admire. He's decided I don't need to be any particular place. So he and his wife went to Greece for a while, and now they're in Nairobi.
Well, there's nothing pulled them there. Just nothing held them here.
Right. So they're just traveling around.
I thought I'd missed a chapter of his story. I couldn't figure out why.
No, he just said, you know, well, he said this on Twitter. He said, the kids are grown and out of the house. There's this window before they have grandkids when we'll probably want to be back in the U.S. for us just to be travel. So for the next few years.
Plus it's cheaper.
It's a lot cheaper. Nairobi's cheap.
There was a cover of Money Magazine, God, you know, 30 years ago, my heroes, the Terhorse. I remember their name. And they said it costs money to earn money. You got to have cars and suits. Live near work and all this kind of stuff. And they had, I think, the grand sum of $500,000 at the time. And they looked where in the world that they could live best on dollars. And at the time, it was Argentina because there was huge inflation in Argentina. And so they could live best. And they were this whole story. I always wonder what happened to them. And they just lived there and they always, they traveled around the world and they lived beautifully.
Vicky and Paul Terhorst.
Oh, no, you found them?
Yeah, unfortunately, their page is on GeoCities.
How long ago was this?
So that's gone. But I did. I found them. That was their homepage. Cashing in on the American dream.
Wow, so it really is that. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. Very interesting. Yeah, Vicky and Paul Terhorst. I don't know if they're still traveling or not. As of 2009, they were. I have always wanted to do that.
Gina, you're not doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, I'm grounded for a little bit.
Yeah, as soon as you have kids, you're out of luck.
Yeah. Passport.
23 years ago, they retired at the age of 35. They live, as of 2007, they were in Phuket, Thailand. There they are strolling the beach.
I've that okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I like living in America.
I do too.
I like living in California. I mean, you got to be crazy to live in California. We almost have 10% state income tax on top of. I mean, you got to be. It's so expensive to live here. But I can't imagine living anywhere else. So they live on $50 a day. I'm sorry, we got distracted. Meanwhile, Google Ventures.
Speaking of such,
yes,
Cory Booker, mayor of Newark, is this week living on just food stamps because of a Twitter challenge to him.
I saw that.
Oh, that's right.
I love him. Is he not the greatest?
He's great. He's great. During Sandy, my wife made me follow him on Twitter, and he was magnificent. Just magnificent. Now, full disclosure, is I'm an advisor to his company, Waywire, but I haven't met him yet. Well, I guess I did years ago.
Cory Booker has a company called Waywire?
Yes, Waywire, very interesting company that it believes that video is going to be the best way to reach news and literacy with young people. And so they're starting a company. So it's in beta right now. And
it's actually hashtag Waywire.
Yes, you make wires of videos that you were recommending. And then you can make videos as well and all kinds of things. So they're just starting it up, but it's really very interesting.
He actually
this
did
is
this.
This is the second company this week I've heard of with the, where they, they're a hashtag. The name starts with.
this is the new thing, hashtag. Right?
Well, yeah, it's
Gina,
new thing.
You missed the boat because there was a baby named hashtag this last
week. That's right. I heard
hashtag
that.
Hashtag Etta.
Hashtag Etta. That might be it. That's a good one.
Hashtags are at this point. You know, we were talking about Abby and the fact that she and actually Abby's my daughter and her brother, my son, Henry, both use. I made that more complicated than it really is.
First, Gina has to tell us how to have a baby, and then you have to explain families to us.
My kids, Abby and Henry, both use Instagram like crazy. Like, they just discovered it. Like, they're posting all the time. And when Abby posts, she just posts in hashtags. She does very few. It's even like the comments. Like, she showed the Christmas tree and said, nice job, Mom. But she didn't do nice job, Mom. She did hashtag nice job, Mom. Is that the new thing? Is that what the kids are doing? It seems like it.
I'm so get off my lawn about that. Sorry, Abby. I've seen people do this on Twitter, and I'm just like, ugh. Just type. Use hashtags the correct way.
But just type.
I still want a file system, so I'm clearly like old and gray.
Okay, get ready for this weird synchrony. Paul and Vicky Terhorst, their nephew, is one of our chat moderators.
No.
Yes. Can we bowl, please?
That's CW.
Small world.
That is weird, man.
Small world indeed.
Well, nephew, tell them that they're my hero.
Rich kids on Instagram. This is something Abby told me about, too. There's like a whole meme of rich kids. Oh, I was at the pool. I was.
Yeah, like here's me draped across this amazing car. Yeah. Like, oh, let me go get my Porsche. Oh, we're out on this yacht.
But my favorite, have you seen the College Humor video mocking Instagram?
No, I haven't seen it yet. I've heard it's great.
I haven't seen that one.
All right, I'll take a break. When we come back, it's a parody of a Nickelback song, and it is quite humorous. So we'll be playing that in a second. But first, let me talk about the no BS mobile phone service. Ting! The folks at Two Cows, I love the Two Cows, they say we're going to look for markets that are ripe for fixing. They fixed the domain registration market with Hover, and now they say, you know, there's really everybody hates their cell carrier, right? Everybody hates their cell carrier. So why don't we do a better job? And if you want to find out what they're doing, go to twig.ting.com. They're an MVNO. That means they're resale Sprint service. So if you've got good Sprint service where you are, this is U.S. only, obviously, you can get the best cell phone service ever with Ting. No overage charges, no penalties, no bundling, no ride-alongs, no contracts, no early termination fees. You pay for what you use, no more, no less. When you sign up for a plan, it's really kind of more like a serving suggestion. You pick how it's $6 per phone. So this is great for a business or a family. $6 a month per phone. 10 phones, $60 a month. That's your base. Then you pick how many minutes you want shared, equal, you know, shared with those phones, how many text messages you want, how many gigabytes of data you want shared. It's always shared. But this is just like, I think I'm going to use this. I'm going to pay for this. Because if you use less, they rebate it. They give you the money back. If you use more, they just charge you what they would have charged for the next plan up. There's never a penalty. And it always includes tethering free, hotspot free, caller ID, three-way calling, video messaging, picture messaging, voicemail, all of that stuff free. If I got, let me just, I said, let's do a family of four phones. I want 2,000 minutes. That's a lot. I want to do, let's do 1,000 text messages. Well, all right, it's Abby and Henry. 4,000 text messages and 3 gigabytes of data. All of that, $130 a month for the whole family. Compare that to your phone plan and then visit Ting. I want you to go to twig.ting.com. You'll save $50 on your first device. They have all the big name phones. It is really a great service. Here's how it works. You're going to purchase your mobile device from Ting, so look at their phones. You'll receive it in 2 to 5 business days. Then you activate it, and at that point, you'll select a new number or port your existing number. Select minutes, messages, and megabytes. I just showed you. And again, it's just kind of like your best guess. Ting will bill you at the beginning of your payment period, but you'll be charged or credited in the following pay period based on what you actually used. You never pay more. No penalties, nothing. They've even got the Galaxy Note 2. Wow, actually, that's less than I paid to get it from Sprint. And you get the great Ting service, the S3. They've got all, I mean, this is awesome. And $50 off when you go twig.ting.com. I really love these guys, and I think you will too. Ting. Yes, somebody's pointing out that now Facebook is using phone numbers. You don't have to have a Facebook account on their messaging app. Boy, I'd be scared if I were a phone company trying to make money on SMS these days. The new Facebook Messenger, well, you could do it to a phone. So you don't even have to pay for messaging. All right, here you go. CollegeHumor.com. This is a Nickelback parody. I wonder if we're going to get an ad here first. Yeah, just a little bit of an ad. No, here it is. Listen to this.
Look at this Instagram. It's been an excite of ham. Straighter is a lemon tart. And my phone went and made it art. And these are my fingernails. The beauty is in the details. Drinking my ties on a cruise. Just a coincidence is also boobs. Everyone look at my feet. Get jealous that I'm at the beach. Probably knew I was going there. You saw my plane swing in the air. Like a boy of city lights. Try seeing them in black and white. Putting glasses on a cat. I'm the first one to think of that. Oh, 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 oh. He thinks he's
I've taken every one of these pictures, by the way. Humiliating.
Lo-fi!
It's kind of a depressing song because literally, I swear to God, I've taken every one of those pictures except for the fingernails, and my daughter does that. Coffee foam, pretentious tome, garden gnome. Okay, this would be a good game. You know, like how many, like a check, the bingo, Instagram
that's
bingo.
Right, that's right. It's your bucket list.
Yeah.
Your Instagram bucket list.
A super close-up of my eye. Now a selfie looking cute. In the same room, well, we'll go on with that later. You should watch the rest of it. It's fun.
That's a great parody.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, you know, when I was deciding where I was going to like publish pictures of Etta, I for a moment I thought, oh, like Instagram, and then I was just like, you know what? Pictures of her just too important, and I wanted kind of some privacy settings.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to cut them off at a weird aspect ratio and do some weird. I just, she's, you know.
So you put them on Facebook.
I do Flickr, actually. Oh, I decided not against Facebook. I put them on Flickr. Yeah, which is great.
That's kind of charmingly old-fashioned of you.
Flickr? What is that?
No, I know. This is crazy. This is the old-fashioned. It's great because only people who are like really looking for them see them, because really no one goes on Flickr anymore. Or in my community, not a lot of people go on Flickr anymore of their own accord. So
it's the Polaroid of our generation, yes.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very retro.
It is.
Well, it's good because you wouldn't be able to display those pictures properly on Twitter anymore if you put them on Instagram. This is a boy. So
interesting.
I don't know how much this has to do with Facebook. Of course, Instagram was purchased by Facebook. And Kevin Systrom, the founder of Instagram, has said repeatedly, we're not going to be Facebook. Facebook's going to let us be independent. But today they disabled the ability for Twitter to display Instagram photos on the website. They basically turned off Twitter card integration. So remember now, to recap, if you're just joining us, Twitter has decided that they want everybody to go to the Twitter webpage and they want all the content on the page. And so they have this Twitter card API so that somebody like Instagram will actually have the photo in the tweet on the Twitter webpage. But Instagram has decided, no, we're going to turn that off. We're going to make you click the link and go to our site. Which makes sense because, of course, that's where their revenue is, right?
But except I've talked on the show about repost.us, about the new – I mean, you would think these companies would be more sophisticated than media companies that realizing they have to make themselves embeddable, and that that's the model you've got to flow with here. And instead, they're going to an old media model and saying, no, you have to come to our site, and we're going to show you stupid ads, and we're going to piss you off as a user. What do they think they are? Wall Street Journal?
Apparently, Kevin Systrom, he's talking today at Le Web in Paris, confirmed the company has removed the ability to send pictures to Twitter. Is that true? They removed it from the app and plans to keep completely cut off embedding pictures on the Twitter website. That is a dangerous thing to do.
It really is.
It is.
And do you think that that was his response at all, or was this an order from on high?
We've decided, quote, we've decided that right now what makes sense is to direct our users to the Instagram website, end quote.
So you can't even just tweet the I understood it that you could tweet the link, but it just wouldn't show up the card. They actually removed the whole thing.
That's what I'm getting from this quote, which doesn't seem quite right. I knew that they the Twitter cards weren't working. But I haven't gotten an update for Instagram that doesn't have Twitter in it. Is that what he's implying? It sounds like that's what he's implying.
I think all you'll get in Twitter is a link to the photo on Instagram, right? That's it.
Right. So you just get the
link. That I understand.
But in the Instagram app, is the option to tweet that photo removed?
That would be a mistake. That seems crazy.
That's not going to happen. That can't happen.
I mean, you know, I think this is crazy. There's some for developers who feel worried or slighted by the limitations that Twitter has been putting on its own API. There's a little bit of schadenfreude here. Like, oh, well, you know, Twitter really wants people to integrate their content into Twitter, right? They want people
to set up
those Twitter cards. And now here's Instagram saying, nope,
not going to do it.
We're going to give Twitter users a worse experience.
That's a really good point.
As of right now, Twitter is in there. Still, yeah. But I didn't get an update to the app yet. So that must be a misunderstanding. I'm reading this from the New York Times. Nick Bilton's writing. So Nick knows whereof he speaks. And this is the quote. He says, speaking at Le Web, Kevin Systrom confirmed, who's Instagram CEO and founder, confirmed the company has removed the ability to send pictures to Twitter. Maybe that means that they're not going to support Twitter sucking those pictures. And plans to completely cut off embedding pictures on the Twitter website.
I mean, the other thing, before we got on the air, when we were in our lovely chat, which people should come by for because they're
the
very nice chats. We have
a little pre-show tea we do together.
Yeah. Anyway, as you were saying then, or we were talking about then, the problem here is that this isn't, you know, somebody on Twitter said to me, well, it's like a media model. This isn't surprising. Everybody wants to go to their own pages. Yeah, except that, again, it's not their content.
Right.
It's our content.
Yeah, so it's very different.
And when you pull these control maneuvers, just look at if Instagram's the new Twitter, it could soon be the new MySpace.
I wonder how much of this is in response to Twitter adding filters. You know, Twitter's adding filters to their app.
I just noticed that. I just used the Twitter picture upload, and I saw the filters. I was like, "Oh, this looks new. This looks familiar."
Yeah, filters are what made Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the good guy and the bad guy in all this?
neither one of them. But who gets screwed? I know who gets screwed. Us.
Yep.
So let me see these filters. All right, I'm gonna save that. Maybe I don't have filters yet, because there's the picture. I haven't upgraded. Are you an Android or iOS? Maybe it's only an iOS right now. Yeah,
Which phone are you using, Leo?
This is the Note, the Galaxy Note.
Oh, the Note.
Yeah.
Are you gonna try the 4?
No, I like the Note. I'm real happy with the Note. I like a phablet, giant phablet.
Does it have Samsung stuff on it?
Yeah, a little bit. I had the unlocked international, but I wanted LTE, so I just got the Sprint one because Sprint's LTE in Petaluma before any I use, guys. So for some reason. So I just traded in for the Sprint one, but it's otherwise the same.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of Sprint stuff on it, and there's not a lot of Samsung stuff on it. Mm. There has to be some because it's got to support the S Pen.
Yes.
So the Note.
Which I wish I had.
Yeah, I like this. I love this phone. I really love this phone.
My problem right now is, I actually, this is the first time I've done this in life. I had some stuff from, decent stuff from conferences and things that I didn't use that I sold on eBay. And I made that into my gadget slush fund.
Now you got some money to spend.
Right now, but now the gadgets I already have, and they're so cheap. You know, I have my Google phone, I have my Google tablet, and I have my Google laptop. What more does a man need in life?
Hey, the Pope's got Twitter.
Oy.
That's not the response. Not oy. My mom used to say oy vey Maria, and I was very confused. Well, mom,
I think my mom used to say that too.
Are you Jewish? Are you Catholic? What are you talking here? She was covering the waterfront. The Vatican announced Monday that the 85-year-old pontiff, Pope Benedict XVI, would begin posting messages on Twitter December 12th.
The Pope's first tweet lands December 12th.
December 12th.
That's the story. That's the story. So
what? It's taken him a week to write his tweet?
He's crafting that 140 characters for the next 7 days.
It has to come from God.
His handle is not at, you know, the real Pope. That would be funny, though. His handle is at Pontifex, which is Latin for Pope. P-O-N-T-I-F-E-X. You know, you've heard him called the Pontiff. Pontifex. I hope his tweets are in Latin. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. No, they're actually going to have them in like 10 languages.
Yeah, if you
and they made
the
a point of saying they're not infallible. Though, of course, mine are.
Wait a minute. They had to say, oh, by the way, while he is normally infallible, the tweets are not.
Yes. They did.
Well, why aren't the tweets infallible?
I know. If it's coming from the same guy.
These are, what, he's got his infallibility shoes on? What is going on? I don't understand. So, he will be accepting questions.
Infallible on the internet, Leo.
He will be accepting questions with the hashtag AskPontifex. And if you could spell it, then you have the right to ask.
Well, can you imagine what that hashtag is going to be like real fast? Wait. Oh, let's see. Will Twitter enable editing of a hashtag?
Oh.
Let's look up right now. What's under that hashtag?
When they asked the Vatican, why at Pontifex, they said all the other names have been taken.
How do you spell Pontifex?
Yeah, well, you got to know. If you don't know, you don't get to ask the Pope. P-O-N-T, Pont, I-F-E-X.
This Ask Pontifex hashtag is...
It's the Illuminati reel.
I think Father Robert Ballester's helping him.
Is it true that if I push down on your hat, mayonnaise pours from your mouth?
Should we search?
I'll clean this up. No, I won't even. I won't read that one. No, never mind.
Well, I hope the Pope has some cardinal who's going to read this stuff, because I don't want him to see it. He's an older man. His eyes could be burning.
I think the verb verarscht in German is something. Like that.
Here's one. A question about the faith. Do you think George Michael could have done a better song if he'd brought Timberland as the producer?
Who would win?
You got to have faith, faith, faith.
Who would win a fight between Jesus Christ and Wolverine?
No! Really?
What is the one thing that Meatloaf won't do for love?
He would do anything for love.
He would do anything for love.
That's the right answer.
That is the right answer.
Is the Illuminati real? Now, that's a good question. I doubt he'll answer it.
Is there a war on feminism?
You know what? Oh, jeez. I won't read that one either.
Yeah, you saw that. The topic of discussion earlier with Gina.
I just saw the one you won't read, and I think I'm not going to read the same one.
I was trying to clean it up, and I thought no.
So there, so far, there is only one question for the Pope that is in any way serious that I've seen. Is it possible to merge the Novus Ordo calendar of saints and scripture readings into the Tridentine Mass calendar in my lifetime?
Some cardinal put that in.
Yeah, his Twitter handle is Speramos, which means we hope in Latin. So it's obviously a cardinal. Wow. This is really asking for trouble.
Yeah, poor priests who have to go through these.
This is like the Muslim rage hashtag from Newsweek.
What are the top two or three rules in the Bible that you would disregard because they aren't relevant today? You're asking the wrong guy. Wow. Okay. And then compare and contrast. President Obama is using Twitter to answer questions about the fiscal cliff. What's the hashtag for that? You ready?
My 2K, right?
My 2K.
My 2,000 bucks, which I'm going to get screwed out of if I'm middle class and we go over the cliff. That's the
so argument. He tweeted today, I'll answer some Qs on that at 2ET. See, he's with it. He speaks the lingo of the streets.
Yep.
B.O. is how he signs everything. That poor guy. He must have been rough in high school.
Unfortunate initials.
Well, somebody said they also think that, I think it was Comedy Central, said they always think it's the dog writing.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's see. He started, I guess, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Let's just search for some hashtag my2k. I bet he's getting even stupider questions than the Pope. No, actually, he's not. Now, this is interesting. He's getting actually some good stuff. These are legitimate questions. Huh.
Oh, and they did a behind-the-scenes videos of him actually tweeting.
Well, we have that, too, of the Pope not tweeting, but looking at an iPad from several years ago.
Yeah.
That's the best they could do. Wow. You remember that Obama, I actually got a direct message from whoever it is that's
the
doing
campaign.
This, the campaign. Well, it was saying, you know, help out or something. I read this, didn't I? Use your Twitter clout to help Obama out. I can't use the new Twitter client. I don't even know how to get to DMs. Where are the DMs?
You have to go to me and then under...
Me?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah, I know.
And then what?
There's an envelope neck underneath.
You barely see it to the right.
Oh, that completely meaningless icon with a blue dot with an envelope? That's the direct messages?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Jeez Louise. And I don't read them because they're maybe... Yeah, use your Twitter influence to help turn out the vote. But he didn't ask me anything to help him with the fiscal cliff, so...
So was that from Tech from Obama or was that from Barack Obama?
Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But that's the campaign, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what is it now? The campaign's over.
That's true.
Campaign never ends, Leo.
No, yeah, no, you can't. It's over. You can't run again. I know.
I know that.
It's over.
Jeez.
He's the president.
We got remedial twig this week.
I'm sorry. Okay. Well, enough Twitter. We're going to move on. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, Google is gunning for Amazon. And you know who's gunning for Google? Could be the feds. We're waiting to hear antitrust action against Google. It's possible.
Leibovitz, our head of the FTC, has been meeting with EU people and trying to figure it out. The word is, I think we might have mentioned this last week very briefly, the word is that the FTC kind of can't figure out how to make a case.
They're huddling.
That won't stop the EU, but, you know.
They're huddling. And
Eric Schmidt is basically saying, I wish they'd make up their mind and do something.
Yeah. I know what he wishes they would do.
Oh, yeah.
Go to stamps.com so they don't have to go to the post office. That's what he wishes.
To file those huge documents against them.
If you're mailing a lot of depositions, court documents... You know, printed emails. You don't want to go to the post office with those case after, you know, all those banker boxes. That's just trouble because there's lots of people there with their Christmas card list. And the lines are long. The parking's tough. This is why you use stamps.com. I bet you Google's lawyers use stamps.com because with stamps.com, you can print your own legal U.S. postage right from your computer and printer. You never have to go to the post office. You get the USB scale, so you always know. And by the, you know, the exact postage. And by the way, you can print right on the envelopes for letters, and that's great. It'll take the address book information or QuickBooks. If you're an Amazon or eBay or Etsy or PayPal seller or that kind of thing, it takes it right from the webpage. So it prints it right on the envelope or the packing label. You get discounts for priority mail and express mail you can't even get at the post office. And if you're sending with one of these certified mail systems, it will send an email to your recipient saying that it's on its way. Here's the tracking information. This is efficient. This is mail for pros. If you're a email professional or a mail professional, snail mail professional, if you do a lot of this and you want to do it better, stamps.com. Now, when you go to stamps.com, you're probably going to be tempted right from the beginning because in the front page it says $80, no risk trial. But don't. I could do better. If you click the radio microphone, it's in the upper right-hand corner there. Where it says, welcome, get started, and enter in the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G, $110 bonus value, $55 in postage coupons to use over the first few months of your stamps account. You get the digital scales free. You just pay shipping and handling. It's $5. Now, by the way, it's not that digital scale. They got a nice new one. They got a brushed aluminum digital scale. You also get a $5 supply kit and a four-week trial. So go to stamps.com, click the radio microphone, use our offer code TWIG, and become a mailing professional. This is my pro tip for people who do mailing. Stamps.com. You will never go to the post office again. You will love it. I promise. And you know what? It's no risk. Just try it. So as you said, the top U.S. and European there's lots of stuff going on. This week, they're meeting in Europe. In Dubai, the International Telecommunications Union is meeting behind closed doors.
And already the U.S. and Canada tried to limit the definition of what they were going to talk about to telephone companies.
Good.
And well, nope, they failed.
Oh.
And so that means that the likes of Google and Facebook could, in the ITU's view, be under the ITU's purview. How's that for sweet?
This is
danger.
This
danger,
is really scary.
Robinson. It's very scary.
So how do we know what's going on? Are there reporters inside or is it?
No, but I think the U.S. came out. U.S. you know is trying to reveal what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
What's the best way to follow what's going on with this?
Good question.
That's a good question. I don't know who's doing good reporting on it per se. I mean, it's kind of all over.
Yeah.
Is Cory Doctorow talking about it? Because I know he pays.
But I think Vince Cerf there, or he's been.
Well, he's been lobbying because on behalf of Google, he's a Google fellow.
I want Andy Carvin like embedded there or something.
Yes,
exactly.
So there's two things going on. There's one that is might be a little bit of a red herring, which is this petition by Russia and others to have the United Nations regulate the internet. Bad idea, obviously. But apparently the bigger concern is that telecoms, particularly European telecoms, want to establish, basically, you pay for the internet the way you pay for telephone service. They want Google, Facebook, Twit to pay not only for our access to the internet, but to pay for access to the users on the internet. Double dip, in effect.
Right.
So AT&T would say, oh, well, Leo, yes, I could see you're putting stuff on the internet, but if you would like it to reach our customers, you should give us some money too.
Which has been going on for ages. It goes back to the day. I know that, what's his name, Milo Medin, I think.
Yeah, love Milo.
Milo's great. He was at, and he's now in charge of the Kansas City Google effort.
Yep.
But I remember back in the days when Milo was at
Excite. At home. Or Excite.
At home.
Yeah, Excite.
Right?
At home. Yeah.
Whatever the, right. And they were talking about that model back then and saying that, well, if you want really good access, you could tunnel right to our servers, right to our head end, but we're going to charge you for that.
And I understand if you're a business, that makes sense to you. You know, it's a toll road. But that's the interest of those businesses. It's not
exactly
the interest of us as the users of internet for free and open internet. And it's not that they're not getting paid. Believe me, they're getting paid. It's that they want to charge twice, basically.
Yep.
I don't know what to... I mean, is this even a possibility that this could happen?
Well, you know, I think what the problem is, we're gonna put up the cat signal again and again and again, and, you know, cry wolf, mix my metaphors of animals here. But, yeah, at some point, one thing is not going to happen. And so people will say, you see, you just call it cried wolf. But it's an indication of a constant gnawing.
Well, they're going to always push for it. And I just...
Exactly.
And because this is behind closed doors, we don't really know what the reaction. The ITU could be laughing.
Right.
We don't know.
What I don't know is what they're. What I haven't seen is a story that explains, you know, I get what various parties want to do. What power does the ITU have to actually do it?
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I don't know is what's in the realm of the possible with what they could actually pull off.
Yeah, because we did have this conversation. I think we also had this conversation on Twit, and everybody agreed the ITU has no authority or jurisdiction in this.
But if that were if nobody were scared, then you wouldn't have Google wasting political capital trying to complain about them.
Yeah,
and that's not the case. They are. And the United States government is saying, watch out, folks. And the European Commission passed a resolution against all this effort. So you put all that together.
It's really a treaty. What it is a treaty conference of 150 nations on how telecom is regulated internationally. And because it's telecom, the problem is these rules were written in 88, pre-internet.
Right.
So... And in theory, they regulate, you know, the ITU was formed to regulate telegraph transmissions in the 1880s. but in theory, telecom could extend to the internet. So there's all these different stakeholders. There's Russia that wants more control over the internet and the internet content. There's the telecoms who want to make more money on the internet.
There are various governments that want to censor what's on the internet. There's
security issues, too. The American and Canadian delegations are very interested in protecting against cyber terrorism.
Yes.
Although you could argue that we are the number one exporter of cyber terrorism in the U.S.
I mean, the larger – I'll take it too far, which is what I do for a living. But the larger thing that's happening here is that the internet disrupts governments. It disrupts every institution, and that includes governments in all kinds of ways, and they're going to defend themselves.
Yeah. The Reuters article that you linked to quotes ITU Secretary General Hamadoun Touré saying that any major changes to the 1988 treaty would be adopted only with consensus approaching unanimity.
That's been supposed to, but again, yes, that's true in that form. But are there other agreements these people can come to in terms of how they operate?
Maybe they'll agree on one thing or something, right?
Yeah. Or will you find five or six countries get together and say, yeah, well, I'll pass that law. You pass that law, too. Yeah,
but then, and that's the other thing. And this is the treaty process, so there does have to be ratified, but it does not have to be ratified necessarily by Congress.
Right.
It could be signed. I gather, I don't understand international treaty law, but I gather that in some cases the president can unilaterally just sign it.
Yes, but I don't get that.
But I don't know if this is one of those cases.
Danger, danger.
Danger, stranger danger.
Meanwhile, my friends in Germany, Christoph Käse, who is the head of policy at Axel Springer, a big publisher there, and they're the ones who've been pushing this whole Verpixelungsrecht, cue the reggae, said today in an interview, it's in German on the site there, but I just found it amazing that he likened Google to the Taliban.
What?
This is like a Godwin law brought to Germany where they can't exactly make the Hitler reference, so what are they going to fix that?
The Taliban.
The Taliban. Now, the great irony of that, I tweeted back to Käse.
It's time.
And said that if anybody is resistant to change, which is what he's saying, it's perhaps you?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens there. I was just trying to play the what is it? Leistungsschutzrecht.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
It's a little German lesson in reggae. I got to play this every show from now on. Every show.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
While you're listening.
The Leistungsschutzrecht.
The mellow tunes of Leistungsschutzrecht.
This was from video from Twig. It's a violation of Twig's copyright.
It is. I'm going to pull this video off YouTube right now. Let's take a break and talk more with Jeff Gina on This Week in Google. I think we should just always have reggae music for all our ads.
Yeah.
The Leistungs Schutzrecht. The Leistungs Schutzrecht.
I wish we had a sponsor named Leistungs Schutzrecht. We don't, though. We do have one called Squarespace. If you are ready for a new website, if you have decided the time has come to put your flag, to place your flag to, in the sand of the internet and say, I am here, I exist, then Squarespace is everything you need. It's the hosting, it's the software, it's the incredible uptime, the amazing price. Squarespace is fantastic. We love it. And by the way, it's modern in the sense that, for instance, and this is, we spent, I don't know how many, actually I do know, I'm just, I'm erasing it from my mind how much we spent on our Twit website. And then after we had it all done, they came to us and said, oh, and you want a mobile site? That'll be $7,000. So we said, well, yeah, you have to have a mobile site. Well, little did we know, you don't anymore. This is something called mobile responsive design. Your website should look the same. It should work on all platforms, right? You shouldn't have a separate site for people coming from mobile. That's so 1990s. So what they do on Squarespace, and all their templates do this automatically, all their software does this automatically, is they rearrange, resize, repurpose to make sure that your site looks great on everything from a 3.5-inch iPhone 3GS to a 27-inch Dell XPS 1 and everywhere in between. Every image processed into 7 different sizes. So that there's always just the right image for that device. The templates you use, and by the way, you completely control how they look, which means they reflect well on you. This is important for artists, photographers, anybody wants to, let's say, do a portfolio online or show off their style online. You get these great templates, but then you completely customize them to match your aesthetic. And they still all are mobile responsive. Drag and drop functionality, however, if you are a pro, they also support HTML5, CSS, JavaScript. They've got a very nice developer platform. It gives you complete code controls, syntax coloring, and all that stuff. There's a new page builder tool called the Layout Engine that enables you to customize pages by adding blocks of content like photos, videos, text, social media, Google Maps, LinkedIn, Facebook, Pinterest. So it's so great to set up this site. You can import all your existing content from your existing site and export it out so you're never trapped. I just think, and then the price is right too. So here's the deal. And I always admire, and I think all our sponsors do this, the idea that they'll give you a free trial because they believe in what they're doing so much. They know, hey, just try it. No cost to you. You don't even need to give them any information. You don't, no credit card or anything. Just an email address, a name of the site, a password, and you're done. And you can have it for 14 days, 24/7 support, the run of the place. If you decide to buy, if you say after 2 weeks, yeah, I'm liking what I'm seeing, the price is right. Amazing. The basic plan is $8 a month. But I suggest that when you buy an annual plan, I suggest the unlimited plan. $20 a month, although if you pay for the year, it's only $16 a month. And I'll tell you how you could save more in a second. You get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries. Now imagine you're a photographer. You want a different gallery for each client, for instance. No problem. What if one of the clients happens to be, you know, One Direction? And it gets tweeted and it blows up. No problem. Unlimited bandwidth, that's fine. It's part of the deal. $16 a month. You got lots and lots of images? No problem. You have unlimited storage. Unlimited storage. You want other people, maybe you want to do a newspaper site, unlimited contributors. When you buy an annual plan, they'll get you the custom domain name and hook it up so that it goes to mynewnewspaper.com or whatever it is. They've got some very nice tools for integrating to Google Apps and MailChimp, things like that, Chimp. I think Squarespace is amazing. I want you to try it free. You know, it's no obligation. The only thing I would ask, if you decide to buy, save 10% by using our offer code TWIG12, TWIG12, and that way we get credit for it. Squarespace.com, the secret behind amazing sites like maybe yours, right? Has somebody created Jeff Jarvis Rastaman.squarespace.com? I saw it in the chat room. I wonder. Maybe it's just a thought. But that's the beauty of these two-week sites. And, you know, I asked Squarespace. Actually, Brian Brushwood asked Squarespace because they're always on NSFW saying, hey, create a site for this. They said, do you mind that we're doing that? You know, getting all these people to create 2 weeks free sites? No. We love it. The more people use Squarespace, the happier we are. So somebody should go there and create Jeff Jarvis Rastaman.squarespace.com. Oh,
Squarespace is so interesting. They took a lot of the staff of Daylife.
Did they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did. And from what I understand, you know, they have a really neat kind of business model where they want scale and they want to grow. And so more people who discover them in more ways, the better off they are.
That's exactly right. That's exact opposite, isn't it? Of, you know, these people saying, oh, no, you got to come to ours. No, no, we don't want to share it. Right. No. It's a different mindset. It's open versus closed.
It's a media versus. I wrote a post last week in which I argued that we keep on looking at media as if it's content when we should look at it as if it's service. Content is that which fills something. Service is that which does something.
Mm. I like that.
How's that for a bumper sticker for the day?
What if the something that you do is put out content?
No, but you're not content. You keep thinking you're content. You're
I'm
not.
Content, damn it!
Community.
What am I?
We are group hug.
No, we are. I tell you, we're a service. We keep lonely nerds company throughout the day.
And piss off
nerd sitters.
We're nerd sitters. If you're worried about leaving your nerd at home alone, don't worry. Just put them in front of the computer or the TV and have twit.tv on, and they'll feel right at home. They'll never even miss you. You'll come back. They'll look up. Said, "Did you leave?" Oh, and they'll go back. We're the nerd sitters. I like it.
I think you are the Barney for nerds.
So apparently the House took a vote, just in case you were wondering. The U.S. House has now voted 397-0 to keep the internet out of UN hands. There's a nonpartisan item we can all agree on. 397-0. It was a Senate resolution introduced by Claire McCaskill and Marco Rubio. Well, good. I'm glad we know. The House doesn't like it. Don't they have something more important going on right now?
No, they have the fiction of the physical cliff. That's just a...
Oh, it's a fiction? Oh, good. Of course. Okay.
Whew. Made up.
I feel better now. You mentioned Eric Schmidt saying, I wish they would just make up their mind whether they're going to sue us.
Apple he's talking about, not the government.
Oh, well, both.
Both, actually.
Both.
Yeah.
He's in...
He's taunting Apple. He's saying he doesn't understand why Apple sued their partners and not them. That's a red flag to the bull, isn't it?
Well, maybe he would like them to turn away from their, you know, Motorola and HTC and Samsung and, you know,
come on.
It's that, right? Where they.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is that?
He's doing the crane. And he's going. I shouldn't have eaten that whole salami right before the show. That was a mistake. How big is an antitrust lawsuit right now, asked the Wall Street Journal, of Mr. Eric Schmidt Happens. I don't know, says Eric. We've been in quite continuous communications with both the Europeans and the Federal Trade Commission. It's time for them to sort of move to one resolution or another. It's not like they don't have a million documents and so forth. I remain optimistic. He, of course, at an All Things D conference said that Google, Apple, Amazon, and Facebook were the gang of four companies that matter most in technology. They asked, do you still see it that way? He says, yes. He says, Eric says, we've never in our industry seen four network platforms of that scale. We've seen IBM, we've seen Microsoft, but now we have four, and the resultant competition is a huge change in the industry.
Which what is all I loved, the reason why you shouldn't be going after antitrust, because we have all these new platforms. But you were saying.
What I loved was his assessment of the Google-Apple rivalry. And I think it was really right on and kind of a little bit of a lesson to the tech press. He says the press would like to write the sort of teenage model of competition, which is I have a gun, you have a gun, who shirts first? I know that's how teenagers do it, but the adult way to run a business, and this actually sounds like exactly what's going on, is to run it more like a country.
Yeah.
They have disputes, yet they've actually been able to have huge trade with each other. They're not sending bombs at each other. He says, I think both Tim Cook and Larry Page have an understanding of this model of business as, you know, states. And when they and their teams meet, they just have a long list of things to talk about. They negotiate. They work it out. It's not a war. So I think that actually makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. I think that's a good way to explain it.
I think that was also negotiation in and of itself.
What?
That's him making a statement of negotiation.
Because maybe Apple is acting like a teenager, but he's wanting them to act like an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. He's opening the door and giving the credit before perhaps it's due, and they can live up to that.
I like this also. They asked, what's the end game of all this patent litigation? He says, you know what? It's going to go on. Google's going to do fine. Apple's going to do fine. Let me tell you who the loser is here. There's a young Andy Rubin, the guy who started Android, trying to form a new version of, let's say, Danger, which is Rubin's company that he started before Android. How is he or she going to be able to get the patent coverage necessary to offer version one of their product? So the real consequence of this is a complete loss of innovation because no one's going to be able to invent anything.
Google and Apple are going to do fine. Big companies that have to spend money. It's about young companies that won't be able to build something interesting. Yeah.
We've been saying that all along. He's absolutely right.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So do you think, what's your betting now? Eric's denying, but you always deny. Rumors are out again for him and Treasury Secretary.
I don't know. If I were him, I wouldn't take it, but I could see him doing it. You know, he spends a lot of time in Washington. I think he's a little enamored of the Beltway.
Enamored of and disgusted with at the same time, I think.
Yeah.
So the question is, does he have the hubris to think that he could actually improve it?
Well, probably. You don't become CEO of Google unless you have some hubris stuck away in your hip flask.
Yeah.
He says, they asked him, I'm glad they did, you're going to do a wireless network? Because, of course, we talked about this, the rumor of Google and Dish maybe joining together to do a wireless network. Schmidt said, I'm sure we'll discuss this, but at the moment we're busy working on wireline in Kansas City, you know, the gigabit Ethernet. He says the current spectrum shortage is real, but it's an artifact of a licensing and regulatory error. New technology allows there to be lots of spectrum, far more than you could use. But the regulators are preventing that, I guess. So he doesn't deny that Dish and Google might do something, but he says we're more focused on wireline right now.
Oh, I hope.
I know, everybody hopes, but I think it's the hope that's speaking, not the actual
I know, it's the same with Kansas City. I want Google services. Because I am Google man.
Yes, we now know.
I live
G on your chest
in the Google world.
Google man. So Google man, what do you think of the daily dying?
So I wrote about that for The Guardian. I think that it was the result of a few things. One was, yes, a paywall. I did the numbers as best I could when it launched, and I figured that they would need 1 million subs to break even on their operating costs. They supposedly spent $30 million developing it. I don't understand how.
Oh, man.
They had a $500,000 a week run rate at the beginning. So on that basis, I did some calculations of churn and the percentage to Apple and all that. So I said, they need to set 1 million. Murdoch at the time said they were going to sell millions. They sold 100,000.
Not even close.
So that's number one problem. Number two problem was that it was daily. How stupid is that? News doesn't have to be daily anymore. It's ridiculous.
It's all the time. You're not saying it should be weekly. You're saying it's 24/7.
It's constant. And then the third problem is that though it expanded past the iPad to iPhones and to Android, but only if you were on Verizon, it was this ridiculous thing I see happening in media business. We have to have a mobile strategy. No, you don't. You have to have a relationship strategy with people, and you serve them well wherever they are, whatever they're doing. And if you change that a bit because they're using a different device, fine. But this idea that we're going to do something different for the iPad is insane. And I hope it's a lesson that publishers have learned. So Murdoch treated the paywall as religious zealotry. And there's no God.
Yeah. John Gruber also said it was just crappily implemented. It took too long to download. It was slow.
It was decent looking, but the problem was that the content was a commodity. It was news. There's plenty of news.
Right.
Nothing special about it.
And perhaps it was insufficiently targeted. It was too generic.
Yeah.
That's how we differentiate, by targeting, by you know, serving a specific niche. If you're serving the USA Today niche, that's not much of a niche.
And Larry Kramer, who is the publisher of USA Today and quite experienced, he started Market Watch and all kinds of big stuff. Larry said last week that he cannot, he was butchering grammar, but we'll give it to him here because he made a good point. He said that he could not charge for USA Today Online because it's not unique enough.
Uh-huh.
And exactly. That's standard. That's true.
Boy, that's pretty insightful of Larry.
That's Larry. Larry's a smart guy.
Yeah.
Jason Kotke did a post on his site, Trend Alert, about small internet publications like The Magazine and The All just released Weekend Companion, which is basically like the other thing in my newsstand. I'm subscribed to The Magazine. I'm subscribed to Weekend Companion, which is like, you know, a few bucks a month or so. And I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think it is working for some people. You know, you have these targeted sites.
How's Marco doing with The Magazine?
Apparently really well. I mean, he just hired an executive editor. He raised writers' rates, and he's doing more stories per issue. So I think that the revenue, greatly exceeded his expectations.
Because it has many of the flaws the Daily did. It's a walled garden. iPad only.
It's a newsstand app. Yep.
On the other hand, it's not heavy. It downloads quickly.
Downloads very quickly, and there's no expensive images. It's not a lot of flash. It's just, you know, it's just basically text and links. But it's done really well. But you know, Marco has a pretty big audience of people who love to read long form, stripped down content. Right,
he created Instapaper. Yeah,
right. So he had that, and the All, you know, theall.com. Like, I don't have time to read it during the week, honestly. But I know there's some great writing going on there, so I subscribe to their iPad app, which is Weekend Companion. And it's like, oh, this is worth it to me. I get to see kind of the best articles from this website that I may have missed during the week.
But how many of those would you subscribe to? I guess you subscribe to many magazines, probably.
Yeah, I mean, as many magazines as I'd subscribe to if it were 20 years ago.
So what is The All, AWL, besides a thing that punches hole in leather?
Yeah, it's a website started by Corey Sika, formerly of Gawker. It's kind of it's the sister site to the Wirecutter, which I'm sure you've heard of. There's a few. There's the Hairpin, the Wirecutter, the All. You get them.
These are all tools for making stuff.
Right, exactly. And
I love Wirecutter. This is Brian Lamb's
site.
Gina is jealous. She wants reggae.
Now, if somebody would just put that to a reggae beat, what the hell's going on?
This happened on All About Android.
She's okay.
Yeah, Gina doesn't. I think she's lost all hearing. Gina, if you could just plug and unplug your USB. For us, we're getting like a dubstep remix of So if you can just unplug and I don't know if that's
that was
fix
really
it.
Unplugging it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's good. She may not be able to hear us now.
Let's take a she's offline, isn't she? Oh no, she's still there.
No, I mean before when I was talking to her, her interface may have died.
Let's play a little reggae while we're waiting for the
the Leistungsschutzrecht.
Coming up a little later on,
Leistungsschutzrecht.
Harper Reed, who is not a werewolf.
The Leistungsschutzrecht.
Actually, he was President Obama's CTO in the 2012 election.
The Leistungsschutzrecht.
Former CTO of
the
Threadless.
Leistungsschutzrecht.
He helped design and test Narwhal,
Leistungsschutzrecht,
which was the get out the vote application. Many credit, at least partially credit, Obama's re-election.
The Leistungsschutzrecht. The Leistungsschutzrecht.
Where's a bong when I need one?
The Leistungsschutzrecht.
I think there's some blunts in the lower left hand
drawer.
No.
There might be.
No.
California, after all.
No. Thank you, Hannes Schlich.
I have a feeling she rebooted because she left chat and is offline now.
She's gone. So. By the way, I do like the wire cutter. I've used it a couple times. The whole idea of the wire cutter is like the best. So, and it's like in a lot of categories. So, like, what's the best water bottle? What's the best small TV? What's the best SD card? And Brian Lamb, who was founder or at least an editor at Gizmodo, as far as I know, at least initially, this was him alone. I think it looks like maybe there's others doing it now. But it's a great idea because I think people just want to say, what's the best? I don't need all the review. There's different approaches to this. Like Gadget has like, well, they aggregate every review and then they have user reviews and then they make a score. This is just like, no, you don't need all that. Just buy the MacBook Air or the MacBook Pro Retina. And actually, I've gone through this and in most cases, I think they're absolutely right. The best big screen TV.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I was just going through the wire cutter because I love it. Panasonic ST50. I actually have a VT50, and I rave about it. I think actually the GT50 is the best. No, the ST50 is the flagship. So everybody agrees this is the best big screen TV. So it's stuff like that. I think it's just great. Just, you know. What's the best iPhone 5 case? What's the best Wi-Fi hotspot? What's the best sports camera? So that's the wire cutter. And then the hairpin, what is that for? Is that for?
I think it's a women's site.
Oh, I don't want that. I'm afraid that'll rub off. Cooties, you know.
Cooties.
And then Split Cider. Is that comedy?
Oh, that's a new one on me.
Split Cider.
Yeah, it must be comedy.
Yeah, it's comedy.
And the Billfold.
The Billfold, is that about money?
Money?
Yeah, cool. This is like a network, blog network.
Yep, this is a blog network.
But with some real interesting style. Yeah, everything.
Corey Sika is a guy with a lot of style.
I like it.
His attitude, he's smart.
And there's no gossip.
Oh, Corey does gossip on The All, doesn't he?
Yeah. The All is a bit gossipy. It's kind of, I don't know, I imagine The All to be a slightly more evolved Gawker. So, for what that's worth.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he wanted Gawker to be.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Corey started at Gawker.
Interesting.
Corey was actually my mentor when I started Lifehacker.
15 of our favorite things said on reality TV. Oh, actually, that's an ad. The best off. Oh, so some of this is from other stories. Famous people who were or planned to be in other Hobbit movies. That's my kind of gossip.
So The Weekend Companion is this iPad app that 29th Street Publishing, which is David Jacobs' company, built. They have this framework for making iPad newsstand apps, and they license it out to The All. They also license it up to another company for this sort of like iPad magazine app. And it's really nicely done. And it's a similar to the magazine, costs a little more. I think it's like $4 a month or something. Slightly different approach. Like the magazine, you get all the back issues for free. With The Weekend Companion, you have to pay $2 to read a back issue.
It's so funny because this is such a forward-thinking hipster kind of website. This seems like such an old model. It seems like they would I want to be the New York, right, Jeff? This is,
well, that's what Nick Denton always said to me. He wanted to be Cy Newhouse. When Cy had 17 magazines, he wanted 17 blogs.
But making him an iPad app and basically effectively a walled garden.
I agree.
I'm not a fan of it. I mean, I love the site. Well, what is the advantage, Gina, from you as a user? What is the advantage?
Well, you know, Corey said when he introduced it, is like, you know, you want to be able to kind of curl up with a long form article and read it, you know, not on your computer screen when you're sitting at your desk at work, but, you know, you're it's the weekend and you're flipping through the paper kind of thing. So it's just kind of a more relaxed, different reading experience, particularly for long form content, right? This is why I send stuff to Instapaper. This is why I really enjoy the New York Times iPad app, for example. I like reading long form stuff on my iPads. It's a different reading experience. It's more relaxing. It's a touchscreen thing. It's in my hands. It has that kind of old school, you know, reading the paper kind of feeling to it. And for me, it's like, The All probably publishes, you know, dozens of posts a day. And I want just the best stuff from the week in a very readable format. Right. And that's similar to the magazine. It's like, you know, right. just good long stories that may be published on blogs later or may have been published on blogs, but curated and edited. And I know it's kind of old school, right? It's very old school.
I'm too ADD. I want to be able to flip around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to live in
one
thing. So it's just not for me. That's all.
Yeah, I agree.
You know what we forgot?
Yes, we did.
Let's play some trumpets.
The Google change log.
Ladies and gentlemen, each week, Gina Trapani tells us what's new with Google.
Big launch this week. Gmail for iOS got a huge update. Have you gotten this, Leo?
Yeah. Awesome.
A while back. So it's very Sparrow-esque. The update got multiple account support for those of us with multiple Google accounts. This is, again, Gmail for iOS. You get an infinitely scrolling inbox, so you don't have to tap load more messages, which is annoying when you go down. Search predictions as you type, a very clean white redesign, and interactive replies to Google Calendar and Google Plus email notifications right from your inbox. So really nice update. In fact, The Verge did a kind of hands-on with it. And they said, you know, it's a little stuttery. It's a lot better than it was. A little stuttery. Could use a little work. But I have to tell you, I've really enjoyed it.
When are they going to put it on Android? That's bizarre to me.
I feel like Gmail got a recent update on Android. Or I think it was just a minor, bug fixy type thing.
Maybe it has all those features and I just didn't notice.
I mean, I've always thought that Gmail on Android is so much better experience than iOS.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Makes sense, right? Yeah. YouTube for iOS also got updated with iPad support, iPhone 5 support,
Yay.
AirPlay, and performance improvements. So you can stream videos with AirPlay to your Apple TV through the YouTube app on iOS.
Nice.
Google Now for Android got an update, brings boarding passes and song IDs. So when you're traveling this holiday season, this is actually straight from the Google Android blog. Before you leave your house, Google Now will tell you what the weather will be like at your destination. This is when you've got a flight planned. Just in time to make sure you remember to pack those mittens. At the airport, your boarding pass will automatically get pulled up, helping you breeze through the gate. And this is launching shortly for United Airlines only, with more airlines to come. And once you've flown and arrived at your destination, Google Now will help you uncover great activities, showing you events happening around you. This is all similar to what it does now, suggesting websites for you to explore as you research things to do. And Google Voice Search now just got What's This Song, right? So you guys have seen on Android, there's that widget now, the What's This Song widget. So if you're listening to a song, you can just tap it and it'll identify the song.
Oh.
You can access that in Google Voice Search.
It's like Shazam.
Shazam, exactly.
So if I do a voice search and I just play a song into it, it should know the song?
Yeah, exactly. It'll tell you what the song
is. Try the Leistung Schutzrecht song on that.
Should I? Go ahead. Play the... Do you have that?
No.
All right.
No.
Wouldn't it be funny if it found it? So I don't need the widget anymore.
I don't need Shazam anymore.
I don't need...
voice search, yeah. What's the song? The Android 4.1 Jelly Bean update is now going out to AT&T Samsung Galaxy S3 users. I believe this is over the air. I don't have one of these, so I couldn't confirm, but someone on Twitter told me that it's going out over the air. So that means
I gave mine to Baratunde, so I can't tell either.
That's a good gift.
Yeah.
So Sprint, T-Mobile, and now AT&T all are getting that update over the air to the Galaxy S3. Still waiting on Verizon, though, on that one.
Jelly Bean's awesome. Get it.
Yeah, yes, the new Jelly
Bean. Yeah.
New flavor of Jelly Bean.
New flavor.
And finally, this is kind of developer-specific, but I thought this was kind of interesting. Google Play comes to Google Apps. So Google Apps for your domain, that's kind of the old name, but I still use it because it's the only way to kind of help understand. When you set up your Google Apps behind a certain domain, you get, you know, certain services, Gmail, Docs, Drive, Drive, Calendar, etc. Now organizations who use Google Apps can set up a private channel in the Google Play Store and distribute apps internally within their organization, right? So if you work at a company and there's an internal company Android app, you can upload that app to this private channel in the Google Play Store and distribute it just to your users, which is pretty neat. So this is Google Apps for business, education, and government domains can have a private channel in the Google Play Store. Administrators allow users must be on the same domain to register with the Android developer console, who can turn publish Android apps to the private channel. This is really neat. It was neat to me as a developer. I thought it was interesting just from the Android point of view. You know, right now to test iOS apps or to do kind of internal iOS apps that are just for a certain number of people, it's a huge pain in the butt. So I really like the idea that organizations or companies or whatever would be making kind of. So if you imagine if you have a conference or a university, that there would be apps specific to that organization. You can distribute them through the Play Store without making them public.
Neat. That's really cool.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to make it into
the change log. Sorry. I didn't interrupt you. Chad did, but I went along with it. What were you saying?
Good. I was going to say, we're going to have to make a Twig host app.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We could do that. I don't know what we'd put in it.
Japani.org.
I can give you reggae lessons.
Let's see. We've got time for our tip number and tool of the week, and then we're going to get over to Triangulation and Harper Reed. Gina Trapani.
Oh, so a little tip this week. This is a new one on me. Google Operating System published this one. If you've enabled that that experiment in Google search results that were includes your Gmail messages in your search results, if you type the words "my flights" into Google, no quotes, you'll get flight tracking information for the flights that you have booked based on your Gmail messages, right? And it'll even show reminders like, "Hey, your flight's taking off, you know, a little late later on." And
that's
that same
great.
Notification that somebody's birthday on Google Plus. So this is, you know, this is Google integrating all of our stuff and trying to figure out exactly what we're looking for. So yeah, just type if before you fly this holiday season. I actually don't have any flights booked because the baby's just too little to fly. But if you have flights booked to travel for the holidays, just type "my flights" into Google and you'll be able to get information about where they're going and whether or not they're on time right from the search box.
I guess I don't have any flights planned. I don't have anything in here. Mm. TripIt does that. You know, I have TripIt scanning through my my Gmail for upcoming travel. But
that
is that going to freak people out? Is that what you're worried about?
No, it freaks me out, the TripIt thing. Even though I think it's a great feature, but do I really want to open up all my email to anybody else?
Oh, I do it all the time.
There was an extension that connected to your Gmail account and scanned all your messages for names and addresses and phone numbers and would automatically populate your contacts, which is kind of an idea. And I forget the name of it. My apologies to the developer. I can't bring myself to allow.
No, that's the same problem I have.
I just did something. Actually, it could be my tool. Well, go ahead. I know what you mean. I guess I don't know. I'm foolish.
Whereas Google's already reading my email, so fine. Tell me about my flights.
Who already has my Gmail, exactly. So it's like, okay. Yeah. There anyway. I mean, I have no illusion that email is private, but, you know, I guess, I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to fool myself.
I'll show you something that I just did that's exactly that. But first, Jeff, with the number of the week.
All right. So I could be mentioning that 44 libraries in California now have free use of Chromebooks for their users, but I won't. I could be mentioning that Apple stock went down 6% today, but I won't. We don't know why. So what I will mention is what I think is very cool is that Google has announced a $23 million set of grants under Global Impact Awards to bring more technology innovation to nonprofits. And among the seven winners is Charity Water, Consortium for the Barcode of Life, Donors Choose, which is a charity I like a lot, where teachers can get people to give money for things they want to do. Equal Opportunity Schools, Give Directly, World Wildlife Fund, and I didn't know this even existed, the Gina Davis Institute on Gender and Media.
Oh, yeah. She's really into it.
Good for her.
So that's kind of cool. It's a good list. $23 million went to these various places, and I thought, you know, good for you, Google. I wrote a piece for my blog, actually, to start off with, maybe it turned into an op-ed, in this tax fight that's going on in the UK over Google, Facebook, Google, Starbucks, and Amazon. They're almost saying, well, you should just give more money. Even though what you do is legal, it's immoral. And Chrystia Freeland from Reuters had a piece this week about rich people, that they think that they should decide where to spend their money rather than taxes and how that's basically debilitating the government.
That's exactly right.
Fascinating. And so here what you have is you have Google basically taxing itself, right, to give charity various things and doing a good job. So interesting.
Is that the same Gina Davis as Earth Girls Are Easy? That Gina Davis?
The actress. The tall, willowy actress, yeah.
Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise, yeah. I don't know if she did Earth Girls Are Easy, but.
Yeah, no, she did.
Fall movie.
She was in a bikini throughout most of the film. I don't know why it imprinted on my memory. She was 6 feet tall. I ran into her once at NAB or something. Yeah, she's very tall. Bowled me right over. So this is exactly what, it's funny that you should mention this because I just signed up for this thing called Sane Box. Have you seen this?
And oh, yeah, that was one of the ones I wanted to sign up for and then I pulled back. It looks neat.
Well, I did it so you don't have to.
Thank you.
So you get, now it works with all IMAP mail. So you don't have to, I did it with Gmail, but you could do it with any IMAP mail system. And what it does is it goes through all your mail. They say we don't read your mail.
But they still have access to it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know exactly. Yeah, you're giving it access with OAuth.
So are they just doing a bit? Are they saying they're doing a better job than Priority Inbox?
Yeah, I guess. So let me go to my Gmail, and I'll show you what it did here. This is always a thrill when I go to my Gmail. it created two new folders, Sane Archive and Sane Later. And I'm not sure why. So stuff that's old stuff. Oh, the later is good because this is, and it seems to have worked. All the newslettery things that I don't really want to have in my main mail, it moves them over. So it's kind of like a rule. Sane Archive is older stuff, as you can see. So the idea is it cleans up your inbox and the stuff that's in here.
I would like that. I'll say.
Yeah, but you have to give it access. To your,
Gina, would you do it? Yeah, same. See, and I go to you, you know, what would Steve do it?
No, of course Steve wouldn't do it, but Steve's still using Windows XP. Steve's probably using Pine. I don't think Steve's
That's
a good
true.
Example.
Steve's using
Steve
Pine.
Gibson, we're talking about our security guy. our algorithms determine the importance of each email, move unimportant messages out of the inbox into a separate folder, and summarize them for you. So you get an email summary.
The summary is, boy, you got a lot of crap today.
Yeah, well, I have my emails out of control, so anything. It moves attachments to the cloud. You connect it to your social networks. It gets smarter about who you want to hear from or not. There's a black hole unsubscribe. Love that. Once you drag something into your black hole folder, you'll never hear from that sender again. It goes straight to the trash.
This is simple. I have a direct message for Google. Buy this.
Well, probably what their plan is, right? Yeah. Follow-up reminders notify you when an email you sent was not replied to by a certain time so you can follow up on it. Defer an email until you're ready. So there's a Sane. There are other Sane boxes. There's Sane Tomorrow, Sane Next Week. So you can just drag a thing over there and it'll let you know. It's $5 a month, but you've got it free for some period of time. I'm using the free version. Monitors your spam folder for good mail and moves it back in. It's an intriguing idea, but you're right. I mean, you have to have some trust.
I almost did it, and then I went.
I did it because I don't have any.
Tempting. Very tempting.
Tempting.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you know. It takes a while. I didn't have any results for a day or two. And then all of a sudden, as you see, it was starting to do some stuff. So there you go.
It's a good tool.
It's a tool.
What is it? Yeah. Tool.
Ask me in a couple of weeks how I like it.
We will.
All right.
Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. I know you had a speech and you're in Florida, but it worked great, and we're really pleased.
I'm fuzzy and pink, but happy to be here.
Yes, and you look great, as fuzzy and pink as you are. Gina Trapani is the creator of a great to-do app called to-do.txt. You must find out more about it. It's available on Android, and it's an iPhone, too.
Yep, iPhone, too.
Yep. You're just going to love it. And, of course, think up and read her in the magazine, Marco Arment's The Magazine, edition 2.
Yep, issue 2.
We do this
great show today. A lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Always fun.
It was fun. Just chatting today. It was very chatty. Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, heavy news show. We're just chatting.
I like that.
Just getting together. A couple of friends getting together, hanging out over the Cracker Barrel, having a pickle. You want to play checkers? We do this show at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Watch live, but if you can't, and when I mean watch live like before and after, too, because stuff happens.
That's when we have fun stuff. That's when we have all kinds of amazing sex relations and gossip and free coupons for millions of dollars, all kinds of things to listen to.
Sometimes. Coupons not included. But if you can't, we do make on-demand audio and video available after the fact. So please join us anytime your schedule allows. And we'll see you next Wednesday on Tweak.